and I'm a prevention specialist with Omni through the Illinois Human Performance Project and the Prescription Playbook. Today we have a very special guest who has graced our sister podcast, Tackling the Opioid Epidemic with the Prescription Playbook, with her presence, but she's joining us today on this podcast. Thank you so much for joining us, and I appreciate you taking the time to speak to us about some of the social determinants of health within Tazewell County, which has a good mix of urban and rural communities as well. So I think we can sort of start off talking about Tazewell County a little bit. It has urbanized areas as well as rural areas with some different and similar needs. Can you tell me a little bit more about the communities here in Tazewell County and how your role as an epidemiologist as well as a volunteer with the EMS has helped you better understand these communities?
Yeah, so Tazewell County, we're technically considered by the state of Illinois a suburban county. If you're familiar with central Illinois, we're kind of considered like a suburb of Peoria, which is obviously not in Tazewell County, but a lot of our folks cross the river to either go to work or for entertainment or things like that. So our population is about 130,000 people. That's kind of decreased over the last few years. Hard to say what the reason is, but our population is 49% female to 51% male. The demographics are pretty evenly distributed, although we do have like a good portion of the population that is aging, so above 55, but it is pretty evenly distributed, which is cool. So our county is one of the largest geographic area counties in Illinois. It covers over 640 square miles. So our folks are pretty spread out. We have three big areas or cities that make up about a half of our population, and then the other half is all rural. So those big areas would be Pekin, East Peoria, and Washington. They're kind of spread out along the Illinois River. That's interesting. Yeah. So it's a balance in the public health world of if when you have a population that's half rural and half not, how do you reach those folks? Because they're very different across the board. So we actually have two campuses at our health department. The one that we're at right now is the geographic center of our county. That's where all of our like environmental health specialists who go all over the county are located. And then our WIC, which is Women, Infant, and Children program, and then our clinic services, which provide immunizations and those kinds of things, are in the People Center of the county in Pekin. So over half of our WIC caseload lives in the Pekin area. We're on bus transportation, so we're more accessible to the folks that need us there. Whereas like our environmental health specialists who are servicing septics and those kinds of things are located in the rural area, if that makes sense.
How do you feel your role as an epidemiologist and also you shared with me as an EMS volunteer really help you see the different populations in the community?
Yeah. So as an epi, I spend a lot of time with social determinants of health and those kinds of things. So I see like the statistical differences in our rural and our suburban areas. When looking at like as an epi, I look at, so every year I write a mortality report. And so I do end up pulling out the causes of death by geographic area. And a lot of times we're fairly evenly distributed. You'll see higher incidences of motor vehicle accidents or accidental deaths in our rural areas, which makes sense when you consider like rural roads with like weird bends and turns and those kinds of things. The other thing that we see more of is there's one pocket in our county that has the highest incidence of heart disease and also breast cancers, but it's kind of nestled in like the heart of farm country when you think about pesticides and those kinds of things. And then there's also the component of like access. Rural areas are not close to our healthcare facilities. We have one critical access hospital in our county, but other than that, you're going across the river to Peoria, which from the southern point of our county could be close to 45 minutes. So yeah, and then as an EMS provider, I've been an EMT for 9 years, hard to believe, but I do serve in one of our rural, actually here in Tremont, I serve. Our department is half volunteer, half paid. So we pay people during the day as part-time employees, and then at night, those of us that live around. And so that's interesting because you'll see the impact of elderly folks who don't have family caring for them, but still live way out in the country. And so you'll see, you know, 90-year-old couple with multiple chronic health conditions that are still living in a farmhouse on a farm. And so for us as EMS providers, it can take us up to like 15 minutes just to get to them. So yeah, but then also I see the effects of like an aging population. I mean, we have a large number of folks with dementia and a lot of chronic conditions, heart disease, high cholesterol, high blood pressure. And when those conditions aren't managed correctly, then you see the more severe effects of like heart attacks, congestive heart failure, COPD, or chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, which is just like a severe respiratory disorder.
No, that was great. You touched on a lot of different topics. At the Illinois Human Performance Project, we talk a lot about sleep, nutrition, chemical health, mood, and mindset. All of these things really encompass how we can equip communities with the ability to make healthy decisions for themselves. But some of the things you were talking about are really rooted in choices that folks don't usually get to make.
Mm-hmm.
Or some things like congestive heart failure, maybe we could play some role in, but there are obviously, you know, complex etiologies and pathologies to these sorts of things. So I wanted to touch a little bit more on how some of the social determinants of health you've seen in Tazewell County really lead to some of the things that you see down the line, including some of the things you see in the aging population, but also things that you see across the county. I think it's really interesting that you mentioned that there are different variety of living situations in terms of wealth or access to resources. I think it's really interesting that you mentioned that it might take 15 minutes just to get to someone in some parts of the county, but not in others. So can you tell me a little bit more about why you think or what you think about social determinants of health, particularly in the context of access to resources? What do you think access to resources looks like in Tazewell and how that might be different for different folks? I think you touched on it a little bit.
Yeah. So one of the biggest things in our county is poverty. So about 9% of our population lives below the poverty line. And here you see the stark difference between suburban and rural. Pekin, for example, they have 8 to 10 different food pantries that are going throughout the month. But then you zoom out to one of our rural communities and they may have one church that does a food pantry once a month. I mean, and then when you're dealing with, when you're thinking about poverty, then you're thinking about food insecurity, and then you're thinking about access to healthy foods. Our county has an obesity issue. And then also we've done a number of surveys that show that people don't want to eat healthy and they don't want to be active. That's just, it's not, in some cases, it's that they don't have access to those things. But in other cases, it's just they don't want to, which is an interesting, like, how do you motivate someone to change behavior when they just don't want to? So our health department, we've had a grant. We don't have it anymore. But the big deliverable of that grant was promoting nutritious food policies in our food pantries. So in our county, we have what's called the Food Pantry Network. I think it includes close to 20 food pantries, most of which are located in religious organizations, which is just really cool that those folks are willing to volunteer and support others in that way. But they've paired that initiative with our farmers markets, and they're trying to get folks access to healthy and nutritious foods as opposed to just running through the food pantry and getting high sodium canned products that are only going to contribute more to our obesity issue and then our heart disease problem. So a quarter of Tazewell County deaths every year are related to heart disease or attributed to some type of heart disease. That's kind of something for us that we're looking at. And then when you pair that with the 15 to 20 minutes for a 911 call, the outcome of those two scenarios could be totally different depending on whether you're located in a rural area or a suburban area, closer to a hospital, less transport times, those kinds of things.
Yeah, I think those are great points. And especially in the case of something like cardiovascular disease, those minutes add up.
Right.
They're super important. The quicker that you can access care, the more likely you are to survive, the better your outcome is going to be. But that's not always the most accessible thing. So what about, we talked a little bit about rural communities. What about in those centers where there are more folks? What do you talked about there being more access to perhaps more nutritious or healthy foods, partnering with farmers markets. What about some other access to resources? What does that look like?
Yeah, so another one of our health priorities is mental health, obesity, healthy eating, active living, and mental health. Those are kind of the three things that we're trying to make a positive difference in. So with mental health, we actually, it's kind of mental health and activity together. We've implemented, it's a program by the University of Illinois. It's called Fit and Strong. Basically trying to get older individuals to be more active, but to be more active in a way that reduces their risk for falls, teaches them how, like, to care for themselves, like foot care, like diabetics and ulcers is a big deal, teaching them how to get up off the floor if they fall, those kinds of things. So we've implemented that class, and I think they've done 4 cycles of it in Pekin, which is one of our largest population cities. And it's located at the Miller Senior Center. And they have a class of like 25 people that come twice a week, and they do simple aerobic type exercise with ankle weights. And it's all around like building strength, reducing arthritic pain and some of those kinds of things. So that's been really cool. Pekin has a lot of resources for folks who are in the older age brackets. There's a program through that senior center as well that will drive people to doctor's appointments if they don't have the ability to drive. The other thing that's a part of my job is I'm currently working with long-term care facilities on improving their infection prevention practices. So reducing the number of healthcare acquired infections and those kinds of things in our nursing homes. We have about 30 long-term care or assisted living facilities in the county. So working with them on like, how do you prevent an outbreak of respiratory disease in your building, making sure we're doing wound care properly so people don't get drug-resistant type infections, those kinds of things. And all of those facilities do a really good job with like activities and keeping people active and their minds active. But yeah.
That's really interesting to hear about. Yeah. I think it's kind of cool that the class is focused on how to meet people where they are.
Yeah.
And how to provide them resources that could be very helpful when they're dealing with something that they probably will or might. It's really interesting that you mention a focus on the aging population, because I think we know nationally our aging population's increasing. But I think that some of that infrastructure isn't necessarily present, and we're certainly having to build a lot of that out. I'm a big believer that investing in, you know, certain populations like the aging population has an interconnected effect, that when we invest in populations that need support, that investment has a positive impact on the community mm-hmm. at large. Do you also hold a similar stance? What perspective do you think there is to share about, you know, providing some of those resources, helping the community overall?
I think our long-term care model is one that could very easily fail people. And I think when we put the proper supports around the long-term care facility, it can be successful. It can prevent disease, healthcare acquired infections, and those kinds of things. I think it's something that we don't always consider, is that as our population ages, there's the normal degradation, so to speak, of memory and ability to care for self and those kinds of things. But there's also the pathological component of, like, we have seen increases in Alzheimer's related dementia in Illinois. There are a number of different potential causes of that, but I think it's important for us to support those facilities because they're doing an important work. No, and what I was really going to say is long-term care is a failed care model. But one of the things I do appreciate here is we've gotten additional grant dollars from the state of Illinois to work with those folks on infection prevention and making those places safer for the residents that live in them, which is important.
Yeah, I think overall, when we can bring those infection rates down, it also means that the entire county is healthier. There's less likelihood of that being communicable to someone else, particularly someone who may go home and care for a large family or children. I think those things are also important. What about the impacts of social determinants of health on our youth? What sort of trends have you seen there that have been interesting or perhaps that have stayed, you know, constant or changed over the last months or years?
Yeah, so one of the things that we're kind of digging into is adverse childhood experiences, which basically the premise of that is you have a child who experiences violence in the home or poverty or observed substance use in the home or alcoholism or anything like that. And then there's been longitudinal studies that show that it then affects their development and or makes them more likely to have adverse outcomes as an adult. There's studies that show that folks who have adverse childhood experiences are more likely to be in a lower income level, have lower educational attainment, have less ability to hold a stable job, those kinds of things. So in Pekin specifically, in some of our more suburban areas of the county, we do see a lot of drug activity. We see a number of overdoses. We have seen a decrease in our overdose deaths in the last 2 years, which I think is attributed to increased naloxone or Narcan. That's the anecdote that will reverse an opioid overdose. We've done a lot as a county to make that accessible to folks. So I believe that's why overdose deaths have gone down. However, people are still using substances. I think you also have to consider the popularity of vaping in the adolescent population and how that will affect their ability to complete schooling and not be a functional adult, but be a functional adult, hold down a job, those kinds of things.
So those are some of the things that you're seeing. Are there any initiatives or programs that you've seen that have had success in having those conversations, putting in those programs in place to provide some of the supports that will maybe hopefully have a positive effect and reduce the likelihood that youth are going to carry these unhealthy practices into their adulthood?
So a part of our health department that is unique, a lot of health departments do not have that. We have a community health division, but within that division is a program that oversees before and after school care for school-aged kids. So they run before and after school care. They'll run camps during winter breaks. They run a summer camp. And embedded in that, there's lessons on healthy eating. There's lessons on nutrition, how to stay active. And then there's also social emotional learning components to it. All the staff that work in that program are trauma informed. So kind of, building up that support around them so that hopefully as they move through school and then become adults, they can either overcome some of their adverse childhood experiences or just become more resilient as an individual.
That's great to hear about. So I think we're hearing that while there are lots of issues across different communities, while communities are still facing poverty, regardless of whether they're rural, urban, or suburban, and regardless of whether they have access to resources or not, that there are several different programs and initiatives in place to really help, provide supports, provide additional resources. Are there any things you think when it comes to, let's say, mental health and chemical health, that's substance use, this sort of broader category, what sorts of trends do you think you're seeing? Perhaps we talked a little bit, touched a little bit on vaping. What other sorts of trends are you seeing that you think are important to consider, particularly when it comes to social determinants of health?
That's a great question. We have seen in the last 3 years a significant increase in suicide attempts in the adolescent population. There are some studies that would say that that is a result of the COVID-19 pandemic. I don't know that you could say that in our county specifically, but we have followed the national trend of our suicide attempts have in the adolescent population have almost doubled in the last year. The interesting thing with that is the means by which they're choosing to attempt suicide is involving their own prescription medications of a family member, or over-the-counter medications. And it's involving the use of a large quantity of substances with the motivation of no longer living. So we see that show up in our emergency departments. And that's, in my opinion, directly related to social determinants of health, because if you have a child who lives in a family who is in poverty, whatever the parental guardian situation is, that parent or guardian is trying to provide for their family. So maybe they're not home when the teenager takes their medication and it could be a legit prescription medication, but there's no adult supervision over that. And so then, that child's managing their medication, then they have poor mental health day or something like that. And then it's like, oh, I have access to this. So this is the means by which I'm in it. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think we're talking about a lot of overlapping.
Yeah.
Certainly a lot of overlapping. And while there are resources in place, there are situations where there are gaps where there is not enough support. And we see that, chemical health, mental health, nutrition, sleep, all of these things are very interconnected and they all impact one another. So I think it's really great that you talked about that. Are there any other parts of your job that you feel show how these interconnected pieces really lead to some of the trends that you're seeing? I know we touched on quite a bit of things.
Yeah, I feel like I gave you a lot there. So the other piece of epidemiology is, it's the study of patterns and trends of disease, chronic disease. I am relatively involved in our community health improvement plan. So that's where that mental health, healthy eating, active living, and obesity came out of. And we have identified that one of the largest gaps that we see in our community is access to mental health care, specifically for youth. The unfortunate thing is a lot of providers and behavioral health folks, they all require insurance.
Yeah.
and, you know, a good with the poverty level that we have in our county, a lot of folks are on Medicaid, and
it's very challenging.
It's very challenging. Yeah. Thankfully, a lot of our majority of our school districts have some layer of mental health care embedded in with like the counseling department. Our largest high school district actually has social workers that are embedded in the school, and they work full caseloads. There, I think, is two of them. So they're trying to address it, but yeah, it's definitely a need. Thankfully, OSF Healthcare, they just built a mental health inpatient facility specifically for adolescents, which is good, because if you need some sort of inpatient care in Tazewell County, you're most likely being transported to Chicago or St. Louis. You're not going to be around here just because there's not inpatient beds. So
yeah, no, I really appreciate you sharing such a wide breadth of knowledge about a variety of different topics. I think that one of the reasons why the conversation is so broad is because social determinants are really broad.
Yes.
And when we think about what impacts sleep, nutrition, mood and mindset, chemical health, there isn't a single thing we can pin down. It's all of these things that make up a community at large, a county. And I think it's really important that we're having conversations that touch on all of these things to really bring awareness to all of the different layers that can really exist. Just prior to us starting this little podcast, we were talking a little bit about some of the trends you're seeing in respiratory illness. And so I was hoping we could bring this all together by talking about some of the trends you're seeing there, and then also some of the things that folks can do to be preventative. What are some ways that we can take care of ourselves in the next couple of months as we face our own, you know, variety of social determinants of health?
Yeah. Yes. That's the other half of my job, is the communicable disease hat. So this past week, our respiratory season is traditionally end of October through usually March. Sometimes it lingers. So we saw a peak of COVID-19 related infections around Christmas time. It peaked RSV, which commonly affects our really, really young people and really, really old people. That also peaked between Christmas and New Year's. And then now we're in the middle of our influenza A or flu peak. I got some statistics yesterday from the hospital systems. Our percent positivity, so the number of people that tested positive out of those who were tested for flu, was 30%. So if you were in a room of 100 people, 30 of those people, or about a third of those people, would have influenza A. And I was on a discussion with some of our infectious disease partners in the hospital systems yesterday, and we were just kind of talking like, what is the result of this? We're seeing not just a number of infections, but a number of severe infections. And so we were kind of discussing why is that the case. And a valid hypothesis is that our influenza vaccine coverage has decreased significantly since 2018. So for the whole state of Illinois in 2018, the flu vaccine coverage for that year was about 30%, which is pretty good. That's the whole point of the flu vaccine, is to reduce severe infections, reduce the occurrences of pneumonia and sepsis, which is a systemic body infection. And then currently, the state of Illinois is at a flu vaccine coverage of about 19%. So in 5 years or so, longer than that, 5-6 years, we've seen a decrease of 10% in our influenza vaccine coverage, or the number of people that have chosen to get an influenza vaccine, which is unfortunate. And it kind of, you know, it leads us in public health, because the four big things that you can do to prevent respiratory disease is to wash your hands for a full 30 seconds with water and soap, to cover your coughs and sneezes, and then stay home if you're sick, and then to get immunized if you're eligible. We have a number of different options for the different respiratory diseases that are out there. But yeah, so it's on public health now to determine how do we show the importance of a seasonal flu vaccine. That's the topic of discussion.
I think it's really great that you shared some of the ways we can stay healthy, all of which are really important. I think, you know, we're talking about washing your hands, which is really important for stopping the spread. We're also talking about staying home if you're sick. Imagine being someone who works in one of those long-term care facilities and catching or spreading influenza, taking it home, particularly if you're living in a more population-dense part of the county and sharing it that way. So we're certainly talking about all of the ways that you could possibly impact others. And also thinking about social determinants of health, if you're spreading the disease to someone who may have access to less resources, that also could lead to poorer health outcomes, mm-hmm. less access to care. And so I think, you know, you're touching on all these different ways that, you know, one could really face mm-hmm. one of the things that's impacting the community mm-hmm. now, at least. And we talked a lot about the ways that social determinants of health appear, how Tazewell County and the various communities within Tazewell County are combating it or trying to provide supports. What are some things you think one of our audience members could do to support the community? Are there places they can volunteer or yeah. initiatives they could be part of that you think could be helpful to really provide a little bit more equity in terms of access to resources?
Yeah, there's probably not a bajillion, but there's a lot of different things people could do. When you're thinking about mental health, the first thing I think of is being a kind, non-judgmental listening ear for someone else. Two, when you're talking about like folks who are either unhoused or in poverty or some of those kinds of things, how easy would it be to volunteer at a food pantry? Like, what would that look like? What would it look like to donate to one? I know a number of schools and organizations and things do canned food drives and those, like, what does it look like to be an active participant in some of that? I'm trying to think what else. And I think probably the third thing you could do is just be conscious that your actions and behaviors affect other people as well. We all either work or go to school or are in an environment that is touching other people. And I personally am a firm believer in you have no idea what somebody else has gone through. And so a kind smile or a kind gesture or just having a positive outlook on life, you have no idea how that could impact somebody else. And sometimes it's worth doing. So,
yeah, I think those are really great individual steps, but also ways you can reach out to the community. I think one of the things that you really emphasize is being non-judgmental listening, but I also heard this element of empathy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's really important and something that regardless of your age or your circumstances mm-hmm. is really important to have. It's important not only to think about yourself, but also about how your actions and your access to resources affects other people.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's really great. Are there any other things you want to share as we wrap up? Is there anything happening with the Tazewell County Health Department that you want to share about or, you know, events or things like that you'd like to plug as we wrap up?
Ooh, that's a good question. We are in the middle of two different surveys right now. And I know everybody's like, oh my gosh, another survey. But if you live in Central Illinois or in Tazewell County and you're listening to this, there are two surveys available on our social media. One is regarding obesity, and that's going to inform some education that we're going to do later this year. And then the other one is on access to mental health care. I know I talked about that a lot. So if you would like to have your voice heard, please visit the Tazewell County Health Department's Facebook page, and you can find the links for those two surveys.
Awesome. Sounds good. Thank you so much for sharing more about your perspective, your community, social determinants of health, and how they impact Tazewell County's ability to have access to things like good nutrition, good mental health, for overall really good mood and mindset. We also touched a little bit on chemical health, and all these things also really are interconnected with other aspects of life like sleep. We certainly know that these concerns exist across the state of Illinois and frankly nationwide, but it's really great, I think, to hear a little bit more about how it's specifically impacting one of our counties in the central part of the state. Social determinants can impact communities very differently. And so I think it's really interesting mm-hmm. to learn more about what that looks like here and different community interventions. Mm-hmm. I think highlighting that things are happening and that certainly we have the room for being able to do more. On behalf of Megan and I, we want to encourage you, our amazing audience, to give these topics more thought, explore them in ways that you can better advocate for yourself, your family, your community. Both Megan and I mentioned some ways that you can provide some support, both in keeping your community healthy and also thinking about ways that you can support yourself. Thanks so much for tuning in. And thank you so much, Megan, for being part of the podcast. I hope everyone has a great day and do your best making healthy decisions. Thanks, everyone. Thank you.